Welcome to the Center for Internet Security's podcast, Cybersecurity Where You Are. Cybersecurity affects us all, whether we are at home, managing a company, supporting clients, or even running a state or local government. Join CIS's Sean Atkinson and Tony Sager as they discuss trends and threats, ways to implement controls and infrastructure, explore best practices, and interview experts in the industry. We are here to bring clarity to these complex issues to bring confidence in the connected world.
Well, welcome back to the Center for Internet Security's podcast, Cybersecurity Where You Are. I'm joined by my co-host, Sean Atkinson. Sean, welcome.
Thank you, Tony.
Always good to see you, Sean, and talk about some of the interesting things happening in the business. And speaking of which, we have a special guest today, Roger Grimes of Know Before. Welcome back, Roger.
Hello, hello. Glad to be here.
Yeah, this is really a treat. It's always a treat to talk to you, Roger. I think last time we talked to you, you were approaching your 14th book or something along those lines. But you guys, Know Before has hit the news here lately with the issue of hiring a remote employee who turned out to be someone working for North Korea. And man, it's one of those nightmare scenarios. And it's so interesting, the story, because it's one of those really very specific, vulnerability scenarios that we talk about, but you don't get to see very much. And you guys have been great about sharing information. So could you give us a little bit of background on the hiring process and sort of how all this came to be?
Yeah, I certainly think that a big part of how this came to be was this onslaught of this, 100% remote employee. I don't know what percentage of Know Before employees were remote before COVID, but if I was just to guess, less than 5%, something like that, of which I was one at times. But certainly after COVID, over half our employees are remote or remote hybrid or something like that. But we certainly have a lot of remote employees and see that everywhere. Like I even went on the CISA, Cybersecurity Infrastructure Security Agency's website a few weeks ago looking at IT security jobs for another webinar I was doing. And most of them were remote. So that's just what a lot of today's world are, especially the programmers, developers, engineers. And so we had went through, got a bunch of resumes. We typically get 100 to a couple hundred resumes that reach out to us for every job position that we advertise on our website and other legitimate bulletin boards. We found this excellent candidate that had all kinds of experience and skills that met our desired skill set. They went through 4 interviews on camera with different people, including that was going to be their boss. And then after they got hired and, signed the contract, and that was all done remotely, right? It's all being done through DocuSign. We sent them a laptop, and you have to go through 2 weeks of 1 or 2 weeks of education, depending on the position. And for the first week, you're definitely doing nothing but education, sent that laptop. And then for whatever reason, after the laptop was turned on, a sensor detected that somebody was trying to install malware. And they had initially tried to do it through a USB key, which we have locked off on all the devices by default. And then they tried connecting to a local server on their local network. And so that sent an IT security alert. Our team at this point is just getting an alert of, hey, malware is trying to be installed on this new employee's computer. And they called to help them. Hey, what's going on? What's going on here that looks like you're trying to install malware or something's trying to do that? And whatever the excuse was, it kind of sent up, it was like, that was a kind of a weird excuse. And then the person, they were trying to explain and see what was going on. And they said, hey, can you get on camera so we can talk more freely versus slacking? And the person made up an excuse why they couldn't. Well, that just sent up further alarm bells. And so I think it was 26 minutes or 31 minutes, but at a maximum within 31 minutes from the time of the alert to the time they completely cut off the laptop, kind of bricked it. And I think I don't know the exact timing, but within a couple of days, it wasn't like the person immediately went, oh, we're being hacked and fake employee. That started as they were looking at different things and they started to look at stuff like the location where they were wasn't matching up where they said they were going to be. It very quickly turned into, hey, there's something strange going on here. Maybe it's a hacker. Then we were talking with the FBI and some other outside groups, and it quickly turned into, hey, that particular name is affiliated with a known North Korean IT worker scheme. that's been noted in another company. So very, you know, within 2 days, oh, it's not only a hacker or whatever, it's a North Korean, you know, worker. And then we learned, you know, all kinds of things. We asked for them to send the laptop back and they did, which was that it was funny. And that was a chuckle in our organization, is that we asked for the laptop back and they did. And I can explain later why that's the case, but it turns out that's not unusual. They don't want to get hit with grand theft charge or something like that. We got the device back and turned it over to the authorities. But I talked to other people at Black Hat that they'd also gotten the laptop back when they requested it. You know, hey, we're terminating you because, you know, you didn't meet terms of service or employment, and send back the laptop. And they apparently routinely send back the laptop. I guess as long as you send them a box, you know, a FedExpress box label, to send it back in. But within a couple of days, our CEO, Stu Showerman, came out and told the employees, all the employees of the company, we have a morning meeting every day, and he talked about this incident. And I got to tell you, I really felt kind of proud, because here is the CEO saying, hey, that we kind of had this event that was near compromised, or some people could say it was a compromise because we hired a North Korean. So I was really delighted, because I've worked at other companies, I don't want to name them, but very large companies that would have never shared this event. You know, it would have been a need to know basis, and you did not need to know. And then within a day of that, he wrote a blog article and shared it with the world. And I got to tell you, he's the type of guy, he believes in this full transparency. And he's the type of CEO that often overshares. Like, people in the audience are going, I don't think he should be sharing that. But it's cool to have that sort of boss. And he shared it. We got some blowback, a couple of people, you know, saying, you know, you're terrible, you got hacked and everything. And literally this guy, luckily or whatever, had no access to customer data, he did have access to email and Slack, but no drive shares, no nothing. And he was in a test system that he would have been learning in, and he would have had to have been on camera for the entire week. So there's a good chance this North Korean wouldn't have made it the whole week without being noticed. They don't like to get up. One of the common denominators, I've now talked to 6 companies that have hired North Korean employees. I had 5 of them come up to me at Black Hat the same day, Tony, that you and I met each other there. But other companies said, hey, it happened to us. We're not coming out public. We didn't invite law enforcement. And I got to tell you, one of the other shocking things is 2 of the companies, one was a 12-person company, one was a 20-person company. So prior to that, I thought, oh, this is a problem of the billionaire company class and Microsoft and everything. They're going after a 12-person company. I mean, that means that there's likely these North Korean employees all throughout the United States and all sorts of different companies and throughout the world.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's an incredible story. And again, kudos to your CEO for, you know, for sharing here, maybe oversharing, but you know, helping us kind of see this. And it brings out going back to where you started, Roger, the shift to, remote work from home, you know, the post-COVID era there. I mean, we're neck deep in that also at the Center for Internet Security, right? So you had to really rethink all kinds of things, the processes, the policies, and all that kind of work. And it's also really exciting. You know, we recruit nationally, right? We are able to get incredible talent to apply to our jobs that would never have moved to our headquarters location. So it's been, you know, really something to behold. But, you know, here we are now in this world where you know, employees may not face each other, may never be in the same room. And it's a really different world. And as you were going through the processes that as they executed at No Before, I'm sort of mentally picturing Sean like running through the technical process, policy controls. Come on, Sean, as a CISO, right?
Yes.
What were you thinking when Roger was going through that?
No, exactly the same thing. I was making sure we had those checks in our list. and sure. It was, but I do, again, as Tony mentioned, you know, kudos to the CEO, because it's this type of awareness, and obviously through No Before, in terms of providing awareness as, you know, the largest security awareness training company in the world, is it was refreshing, because it's the more we share, the better we are. And it, what did I do as soon as I heard that, Roger? I'm going through assessing all of our systems, assessments. I'm doing the protective element. And like you, it was the, you know, the initial training capability, what do people have access to? Should we be re-strategizing and thinking about different elements of control? And if I will say this, and again, you know, this is my opinion, is if CISOs weren't doing that same thing as soon as they heard, then we're not using the lessons learned. We're not preparing ourselves like you, the data-driven approach. Well, this is the data. This is the awareness I need in order to now go back and look at internal processes, to look and assess where could this happen to us as a scenario-based approach. I was tabletopping this with a couple of my folks to go through and say, you know, where should we be? What can we improve? What do we have? Where would we have caught these elements? And, you know, again, obviously a testament to KnowBe4, because a lot of the training and evangelization that comes from the organization is what we've implemented as well, as along with our controls. And it creates this capability allowing us to, one, detect like you did, and protect, which you had as part of your processes, which is awesome.
Yeah, you know, I had a good friend. I had a really good friend, longtime cybersecurity guy, many, many decades, even more than me. And he said, "Well, companies don't have, y'all don't have controls in your hiring process to check for, you know, North Korean spies." I'm like, I don't think anybody does, right? I said, you know, until it happens to you. And I was thinking, you know, what, and I've read back through FBI and DOJ and CISA material now on it. And it seems like the first announcements were a couple of years ago where they were saying, be careful, North Korean employees are posing as contractors on those, you know, free services. You go, you can say, hey, I need somebody to create a logo or, you know, to edit this or do this. And so the FBI was warning about that. I thought, of course. So they started making money and revenue because it's, you know, part of this. You say, oh, North Korean employee, they must be spying and trying to get you confidential information. Well, according to the DOJ and FBI, a lot of it is just to get revenue, that they're, you know, on a sanctioned country list. And, you know, like if you're a programmer in Korea, maybe you make 40 grand, but a lot of these positions were $300,000 jobs. So they're getting a ton of money and that revenue is being, you know, pulled into the company. They're probably getting to, you know, keep a portion of it as well. But it's along a continuum of revenue. At times, they're stealing cryptocurrency and information. You know, but it's along a spectrum, and a lot of them are just working. And in some cases, they are fake employees that work just enough to get fired. And then, like in the United States, I was talking to one guy at Black Hat. It took his company about 3 months to realize, hey, the guy that's working for us is not the same guy that interviewed because he's not the same quality of work. And then he couldn't answer the same questions they asked during the interviews as well. But then in America, it's, you know, HR is like, okay, what you need to do is put them on a performance improvement. and it took 3 months to fire the guy. And, you know, and in the EU and Germany and stuff, it could take you a year to fire somebody after they're hired. So they're just getting this revenue until they get fired. In other cases, I talked to this one person. And he said the North Korean employee was a good employee, was actually turning in tremendous work.
Right.
That's right. So, you know, I don't know if they were fired. If, you know, if not for being illegal, they may have kept the guy. So it's all kinds of interesting stuff. And I will say that, you know, a lot of people thanked us. We had a couple of critics, you know, that said, hey, y'all, you know, y'all are so dumb. You didn't do this. You didn't interview them in person. But I've talked to other companies that actually had done in-person interviews. So, yeah, when North Korea does it, they either do a fake identity, you know, synthetic, they just make it up out of whole cloth. They steal somebody's identity, or they have also paid people, mules in the U.S., to actually pose during the interview to go. One guy was telling me how they went to a drug testing laboratory. So that's where they would do their ID check at the drug lab. But the real guy showed up. You know, it was an American college student paid $5,000 to show up, to go through the interview and show up for the drug test. And I guess that was even part of the surprise, the sophistication, not only in the North Korean side, but there is this infrastructure in the United States where you have other individuals that are cooperating and they get sent these laptops. You know, once they get hired, these laptops get shipped to this guy in his apartment that has 20 laptops, you know, from different companies. One guy told me when the laptop got shipped back to him, it had a yellow sticky on the back of it with his company name. So obviously he's sticking post-it notes to keep track of what laptop belongs to what company. That's right. And his job is to power them up. And then they were using Raspberry Pi KVM. So KVM, you know, keyboard switch mouse, you know, to allow you to do remote control. So that way the North Koreans could come in and it's not being detected as coming in on, you know, like our software would have detected someone using a remote control software program to come into our laptop. If they could have installed it, right? We would have noticed that port 3389 was active all of a sudden. So they're using this out-of-channel Raspberry Pi KVM to come on in. So you have that was the part, I guess, was surprising me, is this level of sophistication. And the FBI arrested somebody in Tennessee last week. Our particular guy was in a different state, Texas or Oregon. I talked to a couple people at the show, and they had located people in different states. As a matter of fact, that's one of the commonalities that I talked to all six people. After the guy got hired, he always came up with an excuse of, oh, you need to ship the laptop. Instead of shipping it to my resume address, you need to ship it to this other location. My mother's sick, and I'll be with her for a month. I've just moved. I'm with my girlfriend at my mother's house, but all six of them. So I think it's the North Koreans. They're like, oh, we got a job. And now we have to figure out which intermediate in the United States do we, you know, ship it to? And they have many different options. Or they're, you know, the guy in Tennessee got arrested, so you're not using him. So you're going to the new guy. And then, you know, it just, it kind of seems along a continuum of whether, what type of identities they do, whether they're stealing money or whether they're trying to steal information. Are they capable of doing the work, not capable of doing the work? You know, it appears to be very large. I don't know whether we're talking thousands of fake employees or tens of thousands of fake employees. But I mean, if I've been connected to by six people in the last 3 weeks, there's a good chance it's a lot bigger than we think. You know, just my sample size.
Well, you know, sort of common wisdom in the intelligence business was that, you know, the difference between the professional adversary and the amateur is infrastructure. The ability to sort of craft all this sort of moving pieces and support information, right? And I think as I've read the blog from your CEO, I mean, you guys did all the usual things, right? The expected things, the background checks and references and ID stuff. And, you know, that's just part of the deal. But then to sort of build the machinery to fake that, right? To build the infrastructure that looks legit, to understand the processes that a company goes through to hire, that's planning. That takes resources. That takes time. That takes some.
Yeah, apparently there's even servers, Discord servers and stuff where people over here can connect to get involved with the process. So you're a poor college student, you want to make $5,000. Apparently in some communities, they have set up bulletin boards or Discord servers where you can go get this job. And then according to, again, what I read from the DOJ and FBI, I've been just reading lots of documents, is sometimes the mules, as we call them, the U.S. mules that are involved, sometimes they knew it was North Korea. The guy that got arrested in Tennessee knew he was dealing with North Korean actors, you know, adversaries. So that's against the law. A lot of the mules, when they were caught, thought they were working for Chinese or Russian people. And they'd been given this cover story of, you know, we just want to be a job. You know, they want to hire us because we're Russian or I'm Chinese and they won't hire me. So I need your U.S. identity so I can just earn a job. And then other times they would claim complete innocence. You know, I was just given $5,000 to go take a drug test and, you know, answer a couple of questions. And, you know, I'm often very suspectful of these innocent mules. But, you know, and I guess that's the other part, too, is it just like, how can there be so many people so willing to take money to, you know, work with such a tough adversary? It blows me away.
You know, I used to say, Roger, that if you want to study capitalism, right, you study the bad guys, not the good guys. You know, that is, you see that specialization, right? Economics of scale, you know, breaking the job down. I don't need, you know, I can hire mules to do this task or that task or that task. And, you know, you get to build sort of layers of isolation, right? And yeah, I mean, let's face it, a lot of folks are knowingly, they realize they're participating in some illegal activity. You know, but hey, You know, you need the money. You know, you can, you know, can professionals know how to prey on human weakness and, you know, kind of work the edge here, reveal just enough. And so, you know, I think it's just fascinating how all that ties together. And the example, again, this, you know, you guys nailed it. And, you know, in the discussions you have with law enforcement, right? You can't separate out the nation state spying stuff from the criminality, from the generating income for my, you know, renegade country. It's all one big swirl. There's no nice, neat boundary. And bad guys know that. You know, in the early days of the cyber stuff, it was pretty clear bad guys studied U.S. laws, you know, and they would know who to jump through because we didn't have extradition treaties, or there would be barriers to sharing information that they could play off of. And I think that's, you know, that's part of what you see, right? In this, again, attackers, there's an old saying also, Roger, you guys remember from the early 90s, that book, but it was something like this, you know, the attacks succeed because the attackers are on an adventure, and the good guys are each defending their little bit of turf. You know, bad guys look for all these weaknesses. They're natural system thinkers. And so, but, you know, the example that you guys went through is just so, such a neat illustration. But one other thing I wanted to ask you about, though, what you also saw was, hey, the technical controls worked, right? You know, we don't, you know, you didn't count on 100% awareness, even though you're an awareness company. You're saying, I always need a mix of things going on here. And it's more sophisticated than layers or, you know, moats and castles and the old models of thinking. But the technical controls and the ability to quickly correlate that with human activity, with the processes that, you know, what were they going to see during their first week, all that kind of stuff. Is that deliberate or just, you know, just kind of worked out that way that in terms of sort of how you defended yourself?
Yeah, I will say that we have a really, really tight system at our company. We are trying to mitigate as best we can being compromised by people because, you know, that our company, it'd be embarrassing if we were compromised. And
we share your concern there, Roger. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
So, I mean, we are certainly, I always say there's two types of like companies, and in our company, everybody's always telling the IT guy, the security guys, why can't I install this app? Right. You know, you install I get a new webcam and my IT company's on me for installing a webcam driver. You know, but that's kind of the company I want to work for. And so we did have a lot of controls in place, you know, and maybe it was or wasn't luck that we caught this guy because he was installing this malware driver. But certainly it's locked down tremendously on purpose for the first week or two. So it would have caught in somebody else. There's other fake employees, non-North Korean, that have been around as well. But the other thing I was proud of is that we have so much monitoring that once we figured out it was a bad guy, we were able to actually see a lot of their environment. We actually collected a ton of information that we were able to collect and also turn over to law enforcement that gave us a lot of big insight. We were able to see, you know, for an example, other compromised laptops of other people, you know, and things like that. So that, you know, because as we all know, laptops are very chatty on their own network, right? And we're able to see a lot of that chatting stuff. But let me also say we want to educate the public. We are a security awareness company, and we want to educate everybody else about North Korean and fake employees and stuff. So we're creating two free webinars. We're sharing the story in one webinar. I'm doing another webinar where I'm going to say, this is how you should be able to detect that you might have a fake employee, and this is how you need to update your hiring process to try to prevent it. So I've got two webinars coming out, a white paper and an article. And so, I mean, if it's all right, I'd love to share some of the signs that you may have a North Korean employee.
Absolutely. Roger, educate us, my friend.
Yeah. So during the interview process, they were on camera and taking interview questions and passing with flying colors. But they had a Gmail address. They had claimed that they'd worked at two past very big reputable companies, and they gave references, but those references were using Gmail and Hotmail addresses. So and all the phone numbers, the person's phone number and the references provided were VoIP, voice over IP numbers. And that's something anybody can kind of look up. You get a phone number, you put it into the internet, and it will tell you if it's in a voice over IP space. So now that would be one of the signs that, hey, the applicant is giving you a voice over IP number. And let me say, we went back and looked at all of our current employees, and we found a guy that had a voice over IP number, but we were able to prove he was a real guy, had been around for years, and everybody knew him and had met him in person. But if we certainly, if we see someone submitting voice over IP numbers, they're going to become higher risk. When we ask for if we're going to ask somebody for references, they're going to have to give a business email domain. So if you say you're from if you've worked at Microsoft.com, your reference needs to have a Microsoft.com address. You know, you can't give us, you know, Gmail and Hotmail addresses and all that sort of stuff. That was something we didn't check for before. You know, this person submitted references which were checked, but they went to fake people. You know, but we didn't know we were dealing with a fake person. And we learned that there are background. We did the typical federal and state background checks, but the person, the identity they were using, which was I'm not 100% sure, but I think it was definitely a valid identity, but I don't know if that person knew or whether it was stolen, but that identity didn't have any criminal activity on it. So when it went through all the current background checks, it came back clear, and there was no check going, oh, by the way, is this a North Korean, you know, fake employee?
Right. That's right. There was no box to check for that, Corey.
Yeah. But we did find out there are organizations that do that sort of testing. It's more expensive and takes longer. Now, of course, we're availing ourselves of that service now that we know that we need it. The FBI and DOJ have pointed out that when they give you a lot of times they'll show you previous work, and they'll have fake LinkedIn profiles and fake project profiles. You know, like in the developer community, your employer wants to see, what did you do previously? And so these people will submit a project website with examples of their projects. It turns out that the LinkedIn profiles, the project websites were very plain. You know, upon reflection, looking at them, they were very simple. You know, there really was no indication that it was actually their project, you know, projects that they are submitting. So, you know, the North Koreans are creating this at scale. So the fake profiles they're creating, the fake project sites, kind of have this common, simple look to them because they're creating them with tools that create them at scale. So that was another thing. So we looked at some of these attributes. We came up with 5 attributes and said, hey, does any of our other employees happen to be North Korean? And we went through the employee base and found out, no. Again, we had somebody that had a VoIP number, and so they matched. And we had to make sure they were real, and they'd been with us 3 years, and people had actually met them, and they were nice. But we did find other instances in the past where they had applied. So it wasn't, you know, this one person, and they just hadn't gotten through the review process or whatever. Talking to some of the other companies, same thing with them. You know, 2 of them, again, out of the 6, had, only because of our article, decided to review their existing employees and found North Korean employees. And then the other ones, all 6 had had a North Korean employee that they had hired, some for months. And then another person found that they were just getting ready to hire a second one. You know, that. So, and let me say, these are 5 of the companies were people I met at Black Hat. So these are cybersecurity companies, in some cases serving our infrastructure, critical infrastructure industries. So I was like, wow. And that does get you, you know, questioning, you know, what if they had access to the information? You know, what if they had access to client list, or like, suppose you were a vulnerability assessment company, you know, this, our adversary would now have a list of all the vulnerabilities of these clients and customers.
No, it's such a weird world now, Roger, right? In some sense, you know, we built the internet as a gigantic surveillance machine, and we're paying bad guys to surveil on us. You know, it's like, what? We're missing something here. But Roger, and also good on you and the company on putting out some materials. We'll make sure any links you have or references we'll point at from the show notes for this episode, as well as from the company, because it's just so exciting to for all of us to learn. So, all right, Sean, I got to put you on the spot here.
Yes, sir.
Because I can hear you virtually nodding with all of Roger's suggestions. Well, any thoughts from your seat as a CISO for a security company that is similarly situated, right? Our reputation is just part and parcel of what we are, and we're very conscious of that.
No, absolutely. I think in some cases, being just a touch facetious, you've not made it until you've had a North Korean try to join your company. So
you're a worthy target.
You're a worthy target, exactly. No, I think the as Roger had mentioned, this has now brought to light another vector. And these are the things that are, we could put all the technical control in play, but now it's taken a different focus and a different look. And it's, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's caused me to reassess. And like I say, that's a responsibility that anybody in a similar position should be doing right now, is going through these processes. In fact, as you mentioned, Roger, with the enhanced searches now, we just signed up for exactly the same thing. In terms of providing that background verification and going into deeper levels of assessment and being able to do that verification. But everything you've said, I mean, ultimately it comes down to creating in your mind the security posture, right? And we've gone from a technology element now to the individual and looking as another element as contributive to defense in depth. Because this is now another tactic, right? We can't get past these representative controls. But hey, if we're on the inside, we can get a laptop, provide it to this person. We get a keyboard, video, mouse, switch, as you'd mentioned. Now we can bypass those elements. And, it was then just part of the tradecraft and ultimately your detective controls that were then able to lead into the investigation. And one of the other things I just want to point out that was phenomenal that you mentioned was the what I'm going to call the triage forensics that you had identified, able to pull information, because ultimately it's not just the laptop, it's my neighbors, right? Because very chatty on the network, able to gather that information and provide it is hugely impactful. And again, at the immediate time, being able to do that versus just, quarantine and cut off communication, getting that information provides you a lot more intelligence and gives you an ability to then assess ultimately root cause, ultimately motivation, ultimately what was accessed. And doing that as a part of your program, I think is absolutely phenomenal. And again, kudos to you and the team.
Yeah, we really appreciate the light that you've shined on this problem, in all seriousness, Roger, and the opportunity to learn from it. Again, this is part of the way of life here on the internet. But, as we wind down here.
Real quick, ahead, I just want to say that. Sure. Thank you so much for that. And I hope that other companies do see this as an example of how to be transparent and share. Because the bad guys are sharing on their channels all the time about what works and stuff. And we need to share what we're finding out, what worked against us, what was successful and being controls. And so I hope this is an example and hopes more companies be more transparent in sharing their data.
No, that's well said, Roger. And really a neat way for us to wrap up the episode, because I think, again, this is tradecraft, as Sean described it, right? And the more we understand of attackers, the better able we are to prioritize our defenses. And there's nothing exotic or out of reach in what you guys did. You connected technical defenses with procedures. You were able to gather data. You had the company sort of management able to participate, work with law enforcement and so forth. So it's a really good example that, there's incredible power in there. And, the bad guy is also, for all that we talked about the infrastructure, but there's also some really clumsy steps in there, right? They're spraying a lot of these things out there. And now it's like the dog that caught the car. Be on video. Let me give you some excuses, and we're all, people are generally nice, right? So we want to, your dog is sick or whatever. You can't be on camera because you're traveling. We want to be accommodating to people, but at the same time, we also have a responsibility to defend our enterprises, to do right by our customers and so forth. So the great lesson from Know Before, again, we'll be thrilled to help point our listenership to all the great resources that you guys are producing and really appreciate the insight that you provided. So, for this episode, let's wind it down, Sean. It's always a pleasure. Roger, thank you so much for for your time and attention here. Any last thought you want to leave with the audience while we have you on?
No, just that I'm always glad to be here. And I think what the Center of Internet Security does, you've been leading the way for, is it 2 decades now? How long?
24 years as of next Thursday, Roger.
So listen to what you guys say, because that works as well.
Oh, we appreciate that so much. Sean, any last thought from you as both a co-host, but also as consumer of the education that Roger's brought us?
No, just thank you to Roger. Again, star of episode 77 and also of episode 98. It was great talking to you as always, and thank you so much.
And to the audience, thank you again for your time and attention. There's a lot going on out here, but man, this has been really fun to talk to our old friend Roger Grimes and get some insight from him. Please join us for the next episode. We release on Wednesdays, and you can subscribe to us in all the usual ways. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to the show today. The thoughts and opinions expressed by our podcast guests are solely theirs and do not necessarily reflect those of CIS. If you're interested in learning more about how to grow your cybersecurity program, the free tools available to help you on your journey, or to get involved with the CIS volunteer community, visit our website, cisecurity.org. Start secure and stay secure.